Off the Ball Breakfast.
I have not seen a minute of this tournament.
That's what the cool kids say these days.
Genuinely,
everyone's saying that. I haven't seen a second of it.
It's not a thing.
It doesn't even
live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The News Run on Off the Ball
with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. It is Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. We have loads coming your way over the next 3 hours. So it's going to be James Barry alongside Jamesy O'Connor to reflect on the hurling semi-final weekend this evening. So a classic in Croke Park yesterday, loads of controversy, and then a scintillating performance really from Cork on Sunday, putting Dublin to the sword. So it is going to be Cork versus Tip in the All-Ireland Hurling Final. Monday Night Rugby is going to feature Fiona Hayes and Mike Sherry this evening. And we'll also be talking this hour to Miguel Delaney, who is at the Women's Euros. We'll also get a bit of an update on some of the transfers he's been reporting on over the last couple of days as well. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp. Kathleen McNamee is here in studio. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello.
Stephen Doyle is here as well. Steve-o, how are you doing?
Good afternoon, folks.
So you've been following the biggest story in sport all
day
long.
Good evening, I should say, yeah.
Good evening, yes. On a sliding scale of mild controversy to a full one-hour episode of Scandal, where does yesterday fit? Are we at that level yet? Is this going to be a documentary?
Well, do you know what? People will look at what happened yesterday and they'll be like, oh, look at this. You know, this is just so amateur. It's ridiculous. Why can't they get the score? It's not the first time we've had a scoreboard issue. But like, only a couple of hours later, at Wimbledon, you've got the electronic line calling system breaking down as well. So, you know, it's happened at Wimbledon.
Yeah.
It can happen anywhere. And I'd say they're probably sorry now that they've made those human line callers redundant.
It's probably one of them that snuck in and just like hit a button, turned it off. What you get. I think the reaction to like yesterday has been very muted. I've been quite surprised that there hasn't been more uproar about it. But even when it was first kind of coming to the fore yesterday after the game, it almost was like everyone's like, well, are they going to do anything about it? Can they do anything about it? And it doesn't feel like Kilkenny are particularly up in arms. And I think it's probably a combination of the sending off, the fact they were a man up, and the fact that I think most people agree Tipperary were just the better team on the day, no matter what the final result was. I think Kilkenny probably would have played differently if they had known what the actual scoreline was at the time. But it almost feels like they've just accepted themselves that they didn't get up for it on the day.
Is that out of some sort of hurling honour, some sort of Kilkenny honour, not to kick up a fuss about this, to take your baiting, even if it, even if you've been screwed over just a little bit?
It does feel like that. I think it's, you know, when we had the controversy a while back with the Kilmacud stuff, and that very much was like the headline for the week, and there was this big talk about it, and, you know, what should they do, what they shouldn't do. We talked about it so much, I remember, at the time. Whereas this, it just does feel a little bit like shoulders shrug. It was a mistake. Let's make sure it doesn't happen again. But Tipperary are going to the All-Ireland.
I think you're right. I think we have all realised what the outcome was going to be from the moment this happened. And we all knew that there wouldn't be a replay.
Yeah.
And therefore, we just accepted that. As opposed to actually going through the process first and wondering if the outcome should actually be a little bit different. And if we talk about how the game went, like, I mean, it definitely had a material impact on how the game was played in the closing stages, and 100%. Therefore it could have had a material impact on the result of the game. Like, imagine if that goal wasn't cleared off the line. Imagine that shot wasn't cleared off the line and hit the back of the net, and it was a draw. That would have been 10-part Netflix series. Never mind Scandal for that. That would have been international news for that sort of, and get kind of the chaotic part of my brain kind of wishes that did happen, just to kind of see how that would have unfolded. Also, I don't think we're giving the umpire enough credit for the catch. It was a hell of a catch. Jeez, he'd be some fielder, whatever.
I feel like people are actually making more of that online today than they are the actual scoreline issue. It's more praise for the umpire and the catch.
There was an interesting line from, well, Derek Ling's press conference. He wasn't really pushed on the points differential. And he was asked, like, you know, what did you think? Well, he said, well, we thought it was 3 points, yeah, but he wasn't really kind of pressed on it much after that. There was another interesting part of the press conference, though, because it was put to him by one of the local reporters from Kilkenny, I think, and he basically said to him, look, you must be disappointed with your goal chance or lack of goal chances during the game yesterday. Certainly wasn't one of the better aspects of your game, and he kind of admitted, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, yeah, look, we weren't good enough in creating goal chances, which I thought was quite interesting because, you know, here's a team that had whacked over 30 points. If they only needed 2 points, they would have been feeling very confident about getting 2 points in that small amount of time. But the fact that they've been so poor at creating goal opportunities, and they knew that themselves, that added to the fact. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a massive disappointment for them. And I just wonder, I think, Kathleen, you're right, like, about the fact that, and you were saying on as well, like, the fact that we knew there wasn't going to be a replay, I think that kind of, you know, takes the wind out of it. But also, there is that thing of Kilkenny, they've been so successful and they are the top hurling county, really, aren't they? And the fact they've won so many titles and they've done it in such an honourable fashion over the years, I suppose you could say,
Yeah. They're
not going to start cribbing over something like this.
It would be very unbecoming, I think, of Kilkenny. And also the fact that they've the most decorated county in the history of hurling. Is there like a lack of real sympathy? Like, can Kilkenny possibly be in an unjustifiable situation because they are the kings of the sport is something I did ask myself today. I was in the ground for this yesterday and had no idea that this was a controversy till afterwards. I just assumed that I was wrong when I saw the umpire wave wide. I was like, oh, obviously my eyes have just deceived me here, and I did not see that umpire wave wide, and it is a point. So I just accepted that was the case. And the first kind of murmurings of it was just on my phone with people who were watching at home. So everybody at home had a much better idea of what was actually going on compared to those of us that were in the stadium. And the one other thing to be said about this, that it's kind of a shame this has happened, because I genuinely think that the Oisín O'Donoghue goal yesterday was one of the most astonishing things I've ever seen live in Croke Park. It was insane, insane. And that should be the thing that this game is remembered for, as opposed to that brilliant catch by the umpire, which, you know what, if that's the thing we remember it for, then fair enough. But the decision to actually go for goal in that moment when you're level pegging is actually nuts. It's like, is it actually a bad decision with an incredible outcome? I think it probably is. And fair play for making that decision, because it was a corker of a goal right into the top corner. Everybody just could not believe it when it hit the back of the net. And I kind of hope that, you know, there is an All-Ireland medal to attach to that, because then maybe Oisín O'Donoghue's goal becomes a bigger talking point in 2 weeks' time compared to how it is today.
It was funny, I was doing the classic thing of watching the game, texting various mates and family members, talking through it, and whenever that goal went in, I got 4 text messages all in a row, just the word unbelievable. 4 separate people, 4 separate conversations, unbelievable. Yeah. And I was like, that just sums it up. Like, the entire country is feeling the exact same way right now. I mean, to have that many Kilkenny players bearing down on you, to be able to get away from them enough to actually get the shot off, never mind have the accuracy and the power behind it as well. It was
And against one of the greatest goalkeepers that's ever played the game as well.
Yeah, it just
and from so far out as well. It wasn't even like he was kind of close into goal and that would have helped him a little bit. It was sensational. Yeah. Unbelievable, one might say.
Tap the ball over the bar. Tom's been in touch to say, I don't accept the premise that Kilkenny would have played totally differently if it was 3 points instead of 4 points. How can you say that with all the certainty you're saying it with? 3 points down in injury time, any team would go for goals. I suppose, to be fair, as I just said, Oisín O'Donoghue should have tapped the ball over the bar at level pegging and he put the ball into the back of the net. So maybe Kilkenny would have played exactly the same way. But look, we don't know for sure how it would have turned out. I just would have been very surprised if Kilkenny were going for goals with the experience that they have in that team. I suspect they would have gone for a couple of points there to try and claw themselves back in to the game. Let's get the news round up and running. And the news round is here with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. And there's really only one story to kick things off with today, Steve-O.
Yep, the GAA Central Competitions Control Committee is awaiting the referee's report from Tipperary's win against the Cats. After Oisín O'Donoghue's 69th minute goal put Tipperary 3 points ahead, 420-29, an Noel McGrath point effort was waved wide by the umpire. However, it was recorded as a point on the official scoreboard. It meant that Kilkenny were under the impression they were a point further behind in injury time, and when the full-time whistle blew, the scoreboard read 421 to 30 points in Tipperary's favour. Croke Park clarified that the full-time score was 420 to 30. Now, after the game, Derek Ling, as I mentioned earlier, he wasn't really pressed on the points issue, but he did speak a lot about his team and their, you know, inability to take on goal chances. So we'll hear from him now, but just after the Tipperary boss, Liam Cal, speaking about the brilliant performance from his side.
It's misfortune, the second yellow, you know, by the rule book it's there, it's the second yellow. We had no complaints with it at all. Just disappointed for Derry, like he commits to everything and I suppose just before that, we probably had really discussed maybe getting Oisin in at that time. And lo and behold, Dara's coming off all right, but we can't get Oisin in his replacement. So, it was a bit of a blow at the time, but look, I think it really ignited the rest of the players on the field. And again, the impact of our bench coming in had a big bearing on today's game. I really thought they gave us huge energy. You know, Tynan in particular was superb when he came on. And obviously, Oisin and Noel, as usual, giving us that calm and influence. So just happy, as I said, that the job is done now. And we try and turn the page as quick as we can and look forward to 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, like, would have been disappointed with the goal. Like, there was, you know, a lot of, you know, I think we had the ball, we lost the ball, had it again, maybe, I don't know. And I think James had given a free at that stage, hand was up, and I was kind of waiting for it to be pulled back, and next thing it's a goal. So, look, that's sometimes when you go down a man, the effort from just ups, and you chase everything down, and yeah, look, you know, we didn't use it well enough, and simple as that, and we weren't urgent enough then with the, you know, use the spare man better.
Yeah, the managers speaking at Croke Park yesterday. Plenty of reaction to our conversation about this. James has been in touch to say, what about some of the Cork goals? I think this is a comment in relation to me saying that Oisin Donoghue's goal was good. If it was Shane O'Donnell or Aaron Galan, you'd be having a segment on the show about it. Plus, O'Donoghue was definitely going for a point. Roll on the Cork hatred. We love it.
Hang on a minute. The best goal of the championship so far this season is Big John Heatherton. You're talking against Limerick.
Yeah, well, yes. God, it is some goal of the year competition,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
And you'd have to say the importance of Oisin O'Donoghue's goal elevates it, but the importance of John Heatherton's goal in creating one of the biggest upsets in the history of hurling is right up there. So, yeah, maybe it wasn't even the best goal scored in Croke Park this year, and there I am saying it's the best goal I've ever seen in Croke Park. You definitely had a first kind of hand account of this red wave coming through Dublin on Saturday afternoon, Steve-O.
Yeah, thanks for the reminder, Owen. Pretty depressing day for Dublin hurling fans. Football fans, not so bad, because we did hammer the Cork women in the All-Ireland football quarter-final. So setting up a semi-final there at Parnell Park. Joseph, it was really weird. I got a bus. Like, I'm out in Wicklow, and I have to get a bus into... I got the darts. I got the dart from Greystones. Into the city centre and out to Fisbury, then on a bus to meet some friends before we did the walk in. And as I'm coming in on the dart, I think maybe myself and two other people had Dublin jerseys on the dart coming in from Greystones all the way through. And every stop along the way, there was more and more red jerseys getting on the dart, you know. So a lot of Cork fans living on the south side and salubrious parts of North Wicklow. But enough about that. Anyway.
No, not enough about that. tell me how they made you feel. It was
weird, and it was funny. As I was getting off the dart, I accidentally nudged off this guy, and I turned around and I was like sitting there as a Cork fan with all his friends. And I said, beg your pardon. I said, listen, I hope for ready for a good old rattle today at Croke Park. I said, would have got a ha ha ha. We knew.
Little did you know what was to come.
It is a movement, this Cork team at the moment. It does, I don't know, I don't really have a great appreciation of how big the buzz was 20 years ago, but certainly last year and this year, it feels like this is just unstoppable momentum behind this team. I do think they need to win an All-Ireland soon while they have this real support behind them. Not that the support ever fades away with a place and a population like Cork, but it just feels really vibrant and really strong this year. Like an away support, in inverted commas, in Croke Park like that. When was the last time that you'd have seen that?
Look, you know, and listen, this isn't Sarah Graves, whatever, you know, but there's always been this, like in the build-up to this game, I felt... You know, Dublin hurling fans are being patronised a lot, and not by Cork fans, I mean by the general hurling community around the country. It was this kind of thing, the Dublin bandwagoners, Snellby, jumping onto the hurling bandwagon into the semi-final, yada, yada, yada. And like, the Dublin supporters were completely outnumbered at Croke Park. Like, I was standing on the hill, and it was probably 50-50, but the rest of the ground was mainly Cork fans. It was probably, because you asked me last week what the percentage breakup I thought it might be, and I was thinking it might be about 65 to 70 compared to 35-30. And when I get in, it was even worse than that.
It was 80-20, I'd say.
Oh, it was massive. But, you know, everybody was kind of, you know, looking down their nose at Dublin supporters, saying, "Oh, these bandwagoners haven't got a clue about hurling." You know, all this. Here's how you'll hear about Dublin fans bluffing about hurling, all this kind of stuff. I was standing in front of a couple of Cork fans. You know, one fella turned around to his mate and says, "Which one is the Hogan Stand?" I was like, "Holy God, this is unbelievable! What, the Hogan Stand?" This, and then later on he goes, "Which of our player, or sorry, who's our number 8? What's his name again?" I was like, "This is incredible! Dublin getting all this slagging about being absolute bandwagoners, and like, this is a complete bandwagon occasion here for all the Cork supporters as well."
Now, in their defence, if you're
imagine the texts are about to start coming in.
if you're standing in the hill, I'd forgive somebody for not knowing is the Cusack on the left or the right, or is the Hogan on the left or the right. Like, not everybody knows. Everybody knows the hill and the Davin, but which one is actually on the left, which one is on the right? And also, naming hurling players is a very, very difficult exercise. If the Cork number 8... maybe not Cork, but if a lot of intercounty players walked in with their helmet off, we probably wouldn't recognise them. So I'm okay with those Cork fans. I think there's more egregious things that have been said at GAA grounds.
I thought they were true Gaels. I thought they were true Gaels.
Paddy's been in touch to say, an arrogant, overconfident Limerick in the quarterfinals led to Dublin being in a semi-final where they were out of their depth. A Division 2 team has no chance against a forewarned Munster champion.
This is unbelievable.
Wow.
Like, Dublin totally, like...
I don't think you can take away what they did against Limerick, despite how absolutely ridiculous that scoreline was on Saturday.
Neil O'Callaghan totally out-tactic John Kiely in that quarter-final. Like, it was a brilliant piece of management. And he said, in fairness to O'Callaghan after the game, like, he admitted, look, they got absolutely hammered, but they were trying a certain style and a certain way of play to handle that Cork team. And it didn't work out. And it is still a very inexperienced... Like, the Dublin manager doesn't have the kind of talent at his disposal as some of the other counties. And he tried to go at it a certain way. And look, you know, the Dublin full-back line was absolutely monstered by the Cork full-forward line. It was just... It was no contest between the two. And Dublin played some good hurling in the first half. They weren't too bad. But listen, they were just outclassed by a far superior team. But I definitely wouldn't be taking away the victory against Limerick. That was well-deserved. And with 14 men as well, by the way.
Tom has been in touch to say, spoiled for choice as regards goal of the season, but could we all agree now that save of the season goes to Sean Brennan against Gillan? In the Liam McCarthy Cup, yes, but in the Joe McDonagh Cup final, there was a better save than that again, which was save of the year, I believe. Paul Mack's been in touch. If Kilkenny were down to 14, as they should have been, Tip would have played differently as well, which is true. Like, I mean, you're not wrong, but it doesn't disprove the idea that Kilkenny would have played differently if they knew they were 1 point fewer down in that situation. Anyway, shall we move on, Stephen? What have you got next for us?
Well, Tipperary and Galway will meet in the semi-finals of the All-Ireland Camogie Championship. Clodagh McIntyre's goal helped Tip overcome Kilkenny by 122 to 19 points in their quarter-final encounter at Croke Park. Waterford's reward for their win against Clare is a last four encounter with defending champions Cork. Now, we're still awaiting fixture announcements on those games, but the LGFA has confirmed the fixture details for this year's All-Ireland Senior Football semi-finals. Meath will take on holders Kerry in the semi-finals of the TG Carr All-Ireland Football Championship. They had too much for Tipperary and won their quarter-final by 14 points. The other semi will see Galway and Dublin face off for a place in the decider. They got past Waterford and Cork respectively on Saturday. So both last four ties will be played as a doubleheader at Tullamore's O'Connor Park on Saturday week. Meath's clash with the 2024 winners Kerry gets underway at 5:15 and Leinster champions Dublin take on their Connacht counterparts Galway at 7:30. And meanwhile, Tyrone landed their fourth underage All-Ireland football title in 5 seasons. Dermot Martin sent over the winning point as the Red Hand edged out Kerry by a point in yesterday's All-Ireland minor decider in Newbridge. It adds to their 3 recent All-Ireland under 20 championship successes.
The texts continue to roll in on the subject. Denny Ryan has been in touch on Twitter to say Tip also played differently, fully withdrew to defend a goal chance. If the lead was 2 on the scoreboard, probably would have pushed up and scored themselves, possibly a 5th goal too. Better team clearly won. That is true. It did have a knock-on impact to how Tipperary approached it from a defensive standpoint as well, it should be said. You've got more news from the Kingdom for us?
Yes, indeed. Kerry manager Jack O'Connor says he'll be without Dermot O'Connor and Tom O'Sullivan for their All-Ireland Senior Football semi-final showdown with Tyrone at the weekend. O'Sullivan will miss the last 4 tie with a calf issue, while O'Connor remains sidelined with a shoulder injury suffered against Cavan. The Munster champions are hopeful Tony Brosnan, Tadhg Morley and Mike Breen will be available, while Paul Gainey will look to prove his fitness in training this week. O'Connor was questioned by our own Tommy Rooney this afternoon in relation to the comments he made after the win against Armagh and how his team were criticised.
There's loads of times there's been criticism, and Kerry are always in the spotlight given the tradition and the history and maybe the amount of players that have done what they've done over the years. So I'm sure there's loads of times you've ignored it. You kind of weaponized it this time, didn't you?
Look, I'm not one of these fellas who calculates stuff, Tommy. But sometimes you just have to, you know, sometimes you just have to go with your gut instinct and say, look, enough is enough here. Like, we, you know, I'm a big enough boy that I can take criticism. But when it becomes personal and when it's said in a kind of a demeaning way, you know, you can, there's a thousand ways you can analyze something, you know. But when it's, you know, when you just phrase it like being taken out of your misery, you know, that kind of vocabulary is no place inside no camp. We're enjoying the hell out of it. You know, there's no misery in our setup or surrounding our camp. So, you know, it was, I thought it was just some of the demeaning language that was used more than anything that I resented, you know. And listen, hey, we move on. I mean, I'm a pretty positive person. I'm an optimist by nature. You know, you'd have to be an optimist, Tommy, to have three goals at this job. I tell you the truth now. So that's parked now. I just needed to get that off my chest and get it out there. But that's parked. I mean, I don't go around every day dreaming up kind of, you know, stuff like that to get me fired up or get the opposition or get my team fired up. But as I said to you a while ago, that was an approach for one particular game, different approach for the next game, and that's the way it has to be, you know.
That's very interesting. It's mad how much of that Joe Brawley column has actually made it into his brain, because like the being put out of our misery line was like Joe Brawley, by the way, is publishing texts in a former Trinity student WhatsApp group, one of them being a former Kerry footballer, Dermot O'Sullivan, who he names in his Sunday Independent column, and he's like, we're not very hopeful for Sunday, we hopefully we'll be put out of our misery or something along those lines, and I'm pretty sure that's what Jack is referencing there. So yeah, it's amazing how that one column has really got inside that camp and has just motivated him to a huge degree. By the way, that full conversation with Jack O'Connor, we're going to bring you that on tomorrow night's Off the Ball. Tommy Rooney was down in Killarney today chatting to him, and he's also been chatting to Meath manager Robbie Brennan. So loads of good stuff coming from Tommy this week.
Just a quick one. If some clothing entrepreneur out there isn't making up T-shirts with Kerry football, enjoying the hell out of it, I don't know what's wrong. What
is
a line.
Is it concerning that he's still occupied by this a week out? Well, not even a week out, five days out.
It didn't do them any harm against Armagh.
That's true.
So that's...
Well, what gets you up for one game?
True. It's a hard thing to keep going back to that well week after week, but it's still a short, sharp burst. Can they stay angry for a month after that? Because that's how long it'll be if they make the final. We'll see. We have a high-profile candidate for the Mayo job taking themselves out of the running, Steve-O.
James Horan is out of the running on for another stint as Mayo senior football boss. He had been linked with the position after the Westerners' decision to part ways with Kevin McStay this summer. Horan has told the Irish Examiner he's informed the Mayo County Board he won't be putting his name forward and feels it's time for something different. Meanwhile, Cavan are searching for a new senior football boss after Raymond Galligan stepped down following 2 years at the helm. The former All-Star goalkeeper has told the Anglo-Celt newspaper that work commitments are the reason behind his decision. Galligan led the Breffni County to top half finishes in Division 2 of the league in both of his seasons in charge, and they enjoyed championship wins against Monaghan and Mayo.
We're moving on to Wimbledon next.
Yeah, Novak Djokovic continued his quest for an eighth Wimbledon title with a four-set victory over Alex de Minaur. The 38-year-old lost the first set but fought back to book his place in his 16th quarter-final at the All England Club. Djokovic looked in pain for large parts of the match, but he played down any concerns about injuries.
No. It was all good. It was just trying to manage sometimes the breathing, obviously, after 30-plus shots, rallies from back of the court. You need a breather and you don't have much time, so maybe that was the case, yeah. It wasn't a great start for me. It was a great start for him, obviously. He broke my serve three times in the first set. Very windy, very swirly conditions on the court. You know, he was just managing better, you know, I guess the play from back of the court. And I didn't have many solutions, to be honest, but I kind of reset myself in a second. It was kind of a tough game to close out the second set. I think that was maybe a momentum shift where I just felt like, okay, I'm back in the game. It was a lot of cat and mouse play, a lot of slices, and you know, he's so good at it. He's one of the quickest, if not the quickest player we have on the tour. And on the grass, obviously, where the ball bounces very low, it's extremely difficult to play someone like him if you're not feeling the ball. really well. You know, he exposes all your weaknesses. So yeah, I was just very pleased to I guess hang in tough in the right moments and win this one.
Yeah, so he's through to the quarterfinals. Currently on court, on centre court, Jannik Sinner is a breakdown against Grigor Dimitrov in the first set. Dimitrov is going to be serving shortly now for that first set. Elsewhere in the men's singles, Marin Cilic put up a brave fight in his match against the Italian 22nd seed. Just lost my scores there. Flavio Caboli, but Caboli came through that one in four sets. And also in the men's singles, there was a win for America's Ben Shelton against Lorenzo Sonego. In the women's singles, the Olympic gold medalist Belinda Bencic eased past Ekaterina Alexandrova in straight sets to progress to the quarterfinals. A teenager Mira Andreeva was also a straight sets winner in her match against the 10th seed Emma Navarro, and there was a win for Ludmila Samsonova against Jessica Busas Monero from Spain. And we are awaiting the match between the former world number one, sorry, it is underway, Iga Swiatek against Clara Tosin from Denmark. It's going with serve in the first set there.
You have some news from Euro 2025. Big win for the Spanish today.
Oh yeah, they hammered Belgium by 6-2, and it was 2-1, I should say, to Spain in that first half. One of the goal scorers, Alexia Putellas, the absolute magician from Barcelona, getting one of those goals. And she got a brace in the end to help her side to a 6-2 win against Belgium. So that's really Spain through from Group B. And their Group B opponents are meeting at 8 o'clock tonight, Portugal against Italy in Geneva. But as Kathleen will know, it's pretty hard to look past Spain at the moment, isn't it?
It's a statement, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But I also think it's one of those scorelines that's a little bit unfair to Belgium, because for the first hour, you would say, they really put it up to Spain. Every time they scored, Belgium were also looking to score or else getting those two goals. It is hard to look past Spain, I think, particularly after the performances of the Lionesses at the weekend against France. Now, I know I was chatting to you before the tournament start, and I did say generally England are not known for starting tournaments well, but they've never actually lost the first game as well. They've always just kind of scraped by with a win. So it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. This Spanish team, though, is just such a joy to watch, because even when they're not great, they still manage to find goals. I think it was quite telling of this game. Whenever the final whistle went, it shot to Patelis' face and she just let out a sigh and laughed. And I was like, that sums up what this game is. If you were to show someone the scoreline, they'd be like, that was a hammering. But I think that actually sums up what this was a lot more.
Right.
Spain were really lucky to get the goals they did. Belgium really put it up to them for the first hour and then just couldn't control the quality and also the people they were able to bring off the bench for Spain as well. So
we will have more on this with Miguel, and like, it's fascinating. Serena Wiegmann had never, well, she had won every single game. She had managed that, the Euros, until being beaten by France at the weekend. So Miguel is in Switzerland. We'll be chatting to him about that after the break, actually. We do have time for a couple more stories, though, Steve-O.
Yeah, Lions head coach Andy Farrell has picked 8 Irish players to start in tomorrow's warm-up match against the Brumbies in Canberra. Mauro Itoje returns to captain the side as Andy Farrell's test team appears to take shape. And maybe just give you the full team there. The front row is Ellis Genge, Dan Sheen and Tadhg Furlong. John McCarthy alongside Itoje in the second row. Ollie Chesham, Tom Curry and Jack Conan in the back row. The halfback line, Jameson Gibson-Park alongside Finn Russell. On the wings, we've got James Lowe and Tommy Freeman. Blair Kinghorn at fullback with Bundy Aki and Gary Ringrose teaming up in the midfield. With the possible exception, one or two slots, very much looks like the starting lineup to face the Wallabies in the first test in Brisbane on July 19th. Farrell was asked how close he feels this is to his test side.
We have teams laid out and we think it could go that way. But it changes, honestly, it changes daily, because it isn't just what happens in the games, injuries, form or whatever, or what you would like to see. It changes daily in regards to, you know, such a body can't train. He's been ill. He's not good. So, you've got an outline and you tend to stick-ish to that, but... as I've been saying all along, 100% stay open-minded enough to let people find the way as well.
The texts continue to roll in on the controversy yesterday. Cullum in Limerick has been in touch to say, just on the scoreboard controversy, Kilkenny could do well to remember the rub of the green that they got in the 2019 semi-final against us. Limerick were denied a clear 65 to tie the game at the end of that day. John Kiley didn't make a big deal out of it afterwards. Kilkenny got the rub of the green that day. It went against them yesterday. Swings and roundabouts. Do you remember that, actually? That was a significant moment in that semi-final. And John in Limerick's been in touch to say, lads, roll up Neil O'Callaghan, next Limerick hurling manager.
Oh my God. What? Are you for real here?
I think.
Good in the Fianna Club, man. He's not going to turn his back on his county now at this stage.
That's Stephen Doyle bait right there. 0879-180-180 is our number. And we're going to have James Barry alongside James E. O'Connor after 8 o'clock to chat about a fairly memorable weekend of All-Ireland Hurling semi-final action. Kathleen McNamee, thank you very much for being in studio with us. Stephen Doyle, thank you. Miguel is up next. Before that, the Cash Machine.